an additional billion, another billion with a B. And then we're back to the, we're still 2 billion short on the quality education model. We wouldn't even have the money for the roll-up costs for current K-12 services. So that leaves Oregon in a tough spot. And we from my perspective, I don't understand why folks don't make, particularly folks in the bigger business community, don't understand that we have a reputation that is now getting entrenched about an inability to fund schools and basic services. That doesn't make for a good business climate. And that really ends up requiring working families, small business folks to pick up more of the weight. I was at the mayors were gathered in Salem the other day, and we talked about that, the shifting responsibility. When the feds and the state don't meet their responsibility, the local government ends up picking up the pieces. It's no way to run a state. It's a short-term plan. And really, from the PTA perspective, we're shortchanging every set of kids that roll through school, getting less and less every time. We spend more, but the reality is things cost more. It costs more for healthcare, for teachers and staff. You know, the everything costs more, fuel for buses, all those things. Those are huge cost drivers. And so we end up balancing the budget on the backs of kids. And that's a really bad short-term plan.
Otto Schell, my guest, Oregon Parent Teachers Association Legislative Director for Measure 97. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to The Beloved Community every second Friday at 9 a.m. on KBOO.
And thanks very much for tuning in. And thank you, John Shuck, for putting that together. It's 10 a.m. on KBOO Portland. And Air Cascadia is off today. And we'll be hearing Flashpoints featuring Greg Palace, Election Crimes Bulletin, a North Korea update, a teacher dismissed for her politics, and a little bit of Bob Dylan, followed at 11 of The Digital Divide with host Rabia Yeaman interviews Donald Hoffman about his research to uncover the underlying secrets of human perception. That's all coming up on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Space is the Place, showing Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. Space is the Place is an Afrofuturist science fiction classic film released in 1974. Sun Ra, space age prophet, philosopher and Afro jazz bandleader, lands his spaceship in Oakland, expanding the cosmic consciousness of African Americans. Again, that's Space is the Place, Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of your homepage under Community Events. Thank you.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Was it the Nobel Prize for Literature? Was it for poetry? Did he get it for poetry? Anyway, at the end of this broadcast, we've got some beautiful sound of Bob Dylan's first interview in 1961, in which he's already lying about where he's from and what he's doing, but it's hysterical. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we're going to kick it off with the policy and the situation in the Koreas, in the South China Sea, and we're going to do it in the context of what these folks, these people who call themselves our representatives, should be thinking about in one of the most sensitive and potentially explosive, and I mean that literally, areas, regions in the world. And we are delighted to welcome back to these microphones KJ No. He is our special correspondent for these issues and for what we call, what the administration calls, the Pacific Pivot, which is full dominance in the China Asia century. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. KJ, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, it's so good to have you with us. And, maybe we can just put it in context. Let's come in through the election door and say, make believe that we were listening to a debate where they were dealing with real issues, and what would this issue be, and what should politicians who are running for president be thinking about?
Well, I think there should be a real emphasis on foreign policy, because it's such a crucial moment in our history. And specifically, we have to remember that Hillary Clinton authored an article called America's Pacific Century in Foreign Policy in 2011, where she noted the importance of the Asia Pacific and essentially making the argument that the United States needed to keep its dominance there. And this goes back to a much older geopolitical consideration that understands the Eurasian continent as being the center of global power, and that curtailing any challengers to U.S. hegemony in the area is fundamental. And so what we're seeing, what we have seen over the past decade or so, is this continual escalation of military forces in the area, continual hype and information warfare against China and other regional powers, and just a general escalation and hostility, which is very threatening.
And of course, Trump is generally full of bluster and, threats of war, but also threats of going in another direction. That's interesting as well. But Hillary Clinton is really a part of a policy that Barack Obama has been responsible for implementing, and Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, in terms of this pivot, is right in the middle of it all.
Well, I think you have to look at the people that she has associated herself with and her policy statements. And it's clear that she is surrounded with neocon war hawks, and that her actions speak much louder than her words, which she has pointed out she has a private and a public position on.
Let me now have you step back for a moment and just give us the brief thumbnail sketch of what we're talking about when we're talking about this Pacific pivot, and then we'll get into some of the other things that go along with it.
So one of the key things is it's an escalation, it's an encircling of China with military forces and military threats. This involves, among other things, missile defense systems, interlocked missile defense systems. It involves multilateral defense information agreements. It also involves an economic arm, which is we refer to as the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a kind of an economic blockade against China, among many other terrible things that it would also do to the planet.
So let's talk about how they plan to implement this policy. And they are seriously creating a weapon system and a monitoring structure so that they know exactly what's going on and can control the region from the air, the sea, the space. Talk about THAAD. What's THAAD?
Yes, so it's part of this system of full spectrum dominance, which is exactly as you put it, to control the sea, the air, cyberspace, all regions of potential conflict. But specifically, THAAD is Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System. It's a missile defense system. It's set to shoot down ballistic missiles between the 40 and 150 kilometer range, which
expensive,
is to say, very, very expensive. It's a $1 billion system. It shoots missiles coming through the exosphere of the Earth's atmosphere. This system has been slated to be placed in Korea. Recently, it was set for a site in Songsan, in Songju. And there was massive opposition to it by the Korean people. And eventually the opposition was so extreme that the government backpedaled and said they were going to place it at another site called Kimcheon, actually on a golf course in that area. And then again, there was massive opposition to this. This area is actually the heart of conservative Korea. It's really kind of the reddest of the red states of the Korean economic political spectrum. And there are people there who are saying that I voted for the president, but now I want to cut my fingers off. We need to impeach the president because we cannot believe that we are being put at risk in this fashion. The THAAD system creates considerable risk. Everybody understands that it really doesn't have to do with North Korean missiles because North Korean missiles do not reach up into the exosphere. It's such a small distance between the countries. What it really does is it, through in collaboration with its X-band radar, it renders the Chinese continent transparent to U.S. surveillance and also defends against a Chinese counterattack, thereby rendering a kind of a mutual deterrence obsolete.
And is this... What stage is this system at in terms of implementation?
Well, so, you know, the system is already ready. It's just a matter of placing it somewhere on the Korean Peninsula. And there's such extreme opposition to it that this is the policy dilemma. There were 100,000 people who signed, you know, a petition, a We the People petition to the White House within 60 days and asked...
From there?
From Korea, asking the White House to reconsider. And, of course, the White House response was that no can do, you know, we're going ahead.
Right, we have another idea in mind here.
Well, there's another agenda, yes.
They've got it ready. Mm-hmm. To implement, mm-hmm. And are there ongoing talks? You know, we're talking about major resistance, but you've got a very friendly government who would love to push this through.
We on Flashpoints have said that the implementation of THAAD was pretty much a done deal, and we said that many years ago. The government is saying that we started, you know, these discussions around February and belatedly, reluctantly, because of North Korean threats, we have to implement the system. But it's understood that under the table, these negotiations were already kind of a done deal, and it was just looking for the opportune moment and excuse to announce it. So, yeah, it looks like it's a done deal, except for the massive civil resistance. In particular, the new site where the THAAD is going to be placed is actually very close. It's about a mile away from a sacred site for one of the founders of Korean Buddhism called Won Buddhism. And they have said, we will not tolerate the deployment of this THAAD system, which will only spark the emergence of a new Cold War.
So there's a resistance going on now?
On right now, yes.
Recently, what's that like?
Well, recently there were 1,000 Buddhist monks who paraded in the streets opposing the THAAD. And, you know, there have been thousands and thousands of civil... people participation in strikes and demonstrations opposing it. Because we're not seeing it in the mainstream press, I don't think people understand the level and the degree of resistance to it. But it is very, 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 very strong.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with KJ. No, he's our special correspondent for things having to do with the Koreas, with the Pacific pivot and policy in the Asia region of this world. United States is obviously trying to exert a full dominance, trying to undermine the Chinese at every turn. This is going to play out in various ways. And KJ always comes in to keep us right up to speed on what the situation is. Let's go from the striking Buddhists to what's happening in the streets, because the government has made a lot of enemies at a lot of levels.
Yes.
And there have been an amazing resistance in terms of labor, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, the larger picture is that many people in South Korea are extremely disaffected with the government. The catchphrase that they refer to South Korea, they refer to it as hell or held Joseon, Joseon being the old dynastic name of Korea. So they refer to it as a living hell. And one of the ways in which it is becoming more and more hellish is a very kind of forceful neoliberal austerity and a very kind of brutal, unjust labor policy, which was tempered for a while, but has come back in the form of, you know, very, very kind of regressive and oppressive labor policies, as well as extreme suppression of labor resistance and labor organizing.
And where is that situation now? We know that people have died in these protests. They have been abused. This is not like anything we usually see here in the United States. I mean, the police get violent here too, but this is these are security forces that are really out there to hurt and kill a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the legacy of South Korea descending from a police state. I mean, it essentially, for most of its modern era, starting from its independence, was a police state put into place as a as a puppet government by the United States military. And so, you know, there have been recent labor strikes. The Korean truck drivers have been striking. This is the public service workers have been striking. The transport workers have been striking. There have been thousands of large strikes. The rail strike is currently in its third week, and the truck drivers have just started striking. But as usual, the police response is overwhelming force. 6,000 police have been deployed to Busan Port and the container depot of Uihang in Gyeonggi-do to put down strikes. It's a continuing, ongoing